This morning we have Michael Rose in, and he has a guest. So, Michael, why don't you introduce our guest?
Okay. Good morning. Today we're going to talk about emergency preparedness. My guest is Kimber Townsend. She's the program coordinator for the Community Emergency Response Team in Polk County. The group is known as CERT for short. CERT is Emergency Preparedness Training Program and is a nationwide program for community volunteers. It's affiliated with FEMA and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Good morning, Kimber.
Good morning.
In a nutshell, could you kind of tell us what the objectives of CERT is? It's my understanding that it provides assistance during emergency and helps the professional responders.
Yeah, absolutely. By FEMA's concept, CERT is a trained group of citizens who are there to serve as an extension of first response systems until the first responders can arrive. So when a situation is large enough that it overwhelms local capabilities and response will be delayed, CERTs are trained to first take care of themselves and their home, then start fanning out across their neighborhood and help stabilize the neighborhood. And then if they're there long enough, we'll assemble at rally points and begin stabilize our entire community until we are folded into the first response system.
Tell us just a little bit about your background. I understand you have you're affiliated with the Independence Police Department.
Correct. I've been a community policing volunteer there since 1995 with various programs, currently serving as the program coordinator for the CERT program, which is housed under the Independence Police Department, though we do cover all of Polk County.
Tell us a little bit about the training involved with becoming a CERT volunteer. It's about 20 hours of training. What sort of things do those folks learn?
Actually, it's a rare CERT program that is 20 hours of training these days. The FEMA minimum standard is about at that. But FEMA also encourages CERT programs to see that CERT basic as a foundational course and then modify it beyond
right.
that to meet the needs of your agencies and their operational gaps and where they need you to train to. Our basic class is 30 hours
right.
For that reason. And we cover kind of a broad spectrum, so we learn a little bit about a lot of things.
Right.
Basic disaster preparedness for the individual in the home. There is a mass casualty triage and medical unit, a light fire suppression and hazmat awareness unit. We delve into light urban search and rescue, some incident command system awareness. We help folks learn about disaster psychology, both for themselves and for victims they may be assisting. And then there's a terrorism awareness module. We've added in a radio communications module, which has upped our class time. And then we finish with a fun little disaster simulation and put all those skills into play.
Okay.
Make up some victims. And
so, like, what kind of disaster scenario would you be talking about?
We take an all-hazards approach. We really talk a lot about what's local for here in Willamette Valley. So, obviously earthquakes are high on
right.
that list. Flooding comes next, and big winter storms. We've had a few of those lately, so response in that area. We can't forget we have to consider tornadoes now. That's kind of a thing in the Pacific Northwest the last few years. So kind of an all-hazards approach. Most of our disaster simulations do focus on earthquake or flood response.
So how many active volunteers?
I have about 80 on the rolls right now.
Really?
And I would say consistently active, probably 60. About a quarter to a third of our membership are teens. We have a teen program from 14 to 18. And that's actually our largest growing component right now, our teens coming in and using CERT as a jumping off point to get involved with first responders until they hit the minimum age to join those agencies.
So why do you think people volunteer for CERT? I mean, what do they get out of it? What are the rewards of being a CERT volunteer?
You know, I became a member in 2003 and a state instructor in 2006 and got my national instructor and program manager in 2013 and again in 2016. I see a trend. I see first the person who knows nothing about
right.
disaster response, and they're hearing about it. They want to know if there really is a reason to get involved, to what degree they really need to do it, and they're just coming looking for those first answers. The second group of folks I see are those who have bought into it. Okay, something big could happen. So what do I really need to do? How long am I really going to be without help? And how can I go beyond myself and help others? And then the third group, like I said, are those teens that are looking for a way to step up and take on some adult roles and responsibilities.
Yeah. Have the local CERT volunteers ever been called out on a real emergency?
We have been over the years. And you know, keep in mind our program's been in place since 2001.
Right.
So we've had time. We have assisted at some drownings at Riverview Park and Independence and crowd control and keeping people away from the scene. We've been assisted on a few missing person, local urban searches, someone that's just walked away from a home. We have done several flood responses, managing sandbag stations. We've evacuated buildings the city has asked us to assist with, a museum. At one point, even our new civic center and police department had some systems back up during a flood event, and we helped evacuate some supplies and materials there. We've done some just ground assessments, helping Public Works keep an eye on trees and power lines and helping.
So this is a pretty significant commitment of people's time and energy.
It is. We call them volunteer deployments. When our agencies ask for help in non-emergency situations, probably an average of 5 to 6 times a year. And then other community assistives, at least 15 times a year, we're being called to come in and do some work outside of an emergent situation. And those are volunteer, not everyone has to do it, but we usually fill pretty large. Western Days, for example, on the 4th of July, we did, 400 hours in just a few days. But once you join the team and take the class, our minimum requirement is that we see you 4 times a year. So we have monthly training sessions every month, and then we have these deployments. They all count towards that 4, so there's a lot of opportunity to hit that minimum.
Well, we've heard a lot about the dangers of a major earthquake in the Northwest, and we seem to get the 100-year flood every 2 or 3 years. But we have another event coming up that a lot of people are concerned about, and that's the total solar eclipse on August 31st, and there's concerns about, traffic backing up and emergency responders not being able to get through if there's a fire or a medical emergency. Is the local CERT team on standby for that event?
Actually, we're not on standby. We're on deployment. Both the City of Dallas and the City of Independence have asked us to provide some support for the events that the cities have planned so that the police department can assign their personnel solely to managing the influx across the community. So we down in Independence, we will have CERTs on shift from 9 o'clock Thursday evening, the Thursday prior, on a 24-hour time clock straight through till about 3 o'clock on Monday. So we'll be down in downtown Independence helping manage the influx of folks for that.
Well, they're talking to like up to 1 million visitors in Oregon, and that's like would increase our population by about 25% over like about a 3 or 4 day period.
Right.
So it certainly sounds like there's the potential for some major traffic problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's very valid. We've encouraged our folks, as has Yamhill County CERT programs in Marion County, telling our folks, treat this as a severe winter weather event. You know it's coming. We've got a couple days lead time. We've had a couple months. But stock up on supplies. Plan to not have to go anywhere from Wednesday through Monday if you can help it. And if you do, carry extra food and water and gas in your vehicle with you so that if traffic does come to a standstill, you don't run out of gas sitting on the highway somewhere. And if you're there, you have food and water. So it's a good opportunity to practice plans, even if nothing was to come of it. And it was a big hype like Y2K. We've practiced plans. And anytime we can practice our ability to be prepared is a good thing. I do think it's going to be a big deal, though. I'm also an EMR and on the fire support team with Polk County Fire District, and the district is asking for all of their stations to be fully staffed that weekend. That's a rarity for a district of that size.
It's interesting. A lot of small towns that typically don't see a huge influx of people, like Lincoln City, Grand Ron, Dallas. They're right. They're like the primo spots to see the eclipse.
Correct.
So it will be a real test of their services, I imagine.
It will be. And it's going to be beneficial in the end. You know, I hope that we get a lot of people and there's a lot of headaches for a day or two and then they go away and all the lessons learned go to really help build a better, robust emergency operations plan for those communities. They've tested it and they'll learn some things and they'll adjust them. I think
it sounds like there's been quite a bit of planning done to gear up for this.
Yeah.
What are your top concerns? I mean, is there something out there that's a big unknown or something that, that maybe we haven't prepared for as well as we should have?
I'll be honest, my biggest concern right now is wildfire. That's my prime concern in all of this. if, you know, we have counties that are granting campground permits to farmers who are going to park campgrounds on their stubble fields in the middle of August, which is the worst of our wildfire season. And we have folks who have waited to the last minute to try to find reservations, and they're going to end up camping in unreservable wild campgrounds, and a lot of them will have no outdoor camping experience at all. And if a big fire hits, our emergency response systems that come into play, from evacuating to the firefighters themselves to sheltering operations like Red Cross, will not be able to travel congested highways to get to the event. And that is my biggest fear right now.
And you have all these people drinking and partying and barbecuing
and smoking and fireworks, and I'm sure they will see the gamut of it. And that really concerns me. I mean, if we can't evacuate a community because the road arterials we'd evacuate them onto are clogged, we're in a real big trouble spot. So that's my biggest concern.
So what preparation should the average person take for the eclipse? You mentioned stocking up on food and water and.
Mm-hmm. I really think just plan not to drive. Right, go look at the sky at. This weekend, maybe when you're home at 10:21, and see if you can see the sun. And if you can, then you have a good viewing spot. Stay there, right?
Yeah.
You know, that should be the first concern. Secondary concern is know where your family are and the routes, and encourage folks that do have to drive to take back roads. Do it on a full tank of gas and carry extra with you. I think that there's some validity to gas stations that are right off the main arterials potentially running out of gas. The trucks that fuel them are going to have difficulty getting there to refuel. We'll have a bigger draw than usual. I don't think we're going to have social strife and looting and all that kind of stuff. But definitely, if there's any way to stay home, I encourage folks that are scheduled to work that day to be talking to their employers now about telecommuting from home or making that time up elsewhere or just taking a day off and call it a staycation and stay home with the family and enjoy the eclipse.
I've heard stories about there's some concerns in grocery stores maybe running out of supplies.
That's valid. When we talk about insert training after a post-disaster, most grocery stores have about a three-day supply on their shelves, pending trucks getting there. And it's not just a case of did the supply truck make it, but were their employees able to get to the store to offload those trucks and put the product on the shelf? So there's two groups of folks that need to be able to get to the store to keep stuff on the shelves. And I think that could be hampered.
So fill your tank and buy groceries would be good advice.
Absolutely.
And lay low at home if you can.
Absolutely. And if you have to travel, take side roads. Try to stay off the highways.
One of the questions that I had when you mentioned that was that you might want to stock up on food early because all these people coming in might have that very same idea and start buying a lot of food where the shelves empty earlier than people suspect, even if the trucks can get through.
Right. We're telling our folks to do the weekend before. So the weekend prior, be ready to go. If you are able to make a few small trips on Wednesday, Thursday, great. But really plan the weekend prior to have your plan in place and all of your shopping done and be ready to go. Our certs will not be the ones calling for help. I'd be surprised, we're going to be working. But, you know, I live just 15 minutes from Independence, and I will be camping at the campground during the event. I won't be driving back and forth to my shifts either. We're just planning on staying right there and in the volunteer campsite. So, even those of us who know are still reducing as much as possible.
What I think is interesting is how even a minor problem could become a big deal in a situation like that. That, you know, if you get a power outage, if a water main breaks, if there's a traffic accident, it's going to be a huge deal to take care of.
And little things can become big deals on a regular basis for us. You know, we were chatting earlier and I said an accident on Highway 22 can slow traffic for an hour and a half, especially if it's on the bridge or near the bridges. But if we have all these folks who decided to travel at the last minute because they thought this was all going to be hooey, and they all pull off the road to watch the eclipse on the shoulders of the highway, that might go okay. But when they all start to resume speed on a 65-mile-an-hour highway right after the eclipse, then I think we're going to have bumper cars. And 10 accidents are going to happen, and first responder vehicles won't be able to get there timely to take care of it and clear it. And I think that's when our big problems are going to hit. Yeah. It's going to slow things down for sure.
Do you know if some of the towns in Polk County, like Dallas, Independence, and Monmouth, do they have like a special emergency plan for this event? Do you know how prepared they are?
And there's a lot of meetings, and not just within the cities, but across the cities. The city chiefs are getting together regularly and talking about it. The fire chiefs have come together and are talking about it. Every city and every fire district already has an emergency operations plan that has annexes specific to managing mass traffic or a mass casualty or a wildfire. So there are pieces of their plans already in place that they'll be pulling from in planning this response. I know that Dallas has been actively working for over a year, Monmouth Independence not too shortly after that. So I think there is a lot. You know, what we have to deal with in our county is just a few arterials, and we have to make sure that we aren't all planning to put people on the same route at the same time. There has to be some coordination, and I think that's happening.
Yeah. You mentioned going, trying to take back roads into work, and if you live in Polk County and want to get to the other side of the river, there's not really a lot of back roads.
Yeah, crossing the river is going to be a challenge.
You can go across the main bridge down Highway 22 into Salem, or you can go down River Road. And I know if there's a problem on the Salem bridges, River Road quickly becomes
a mess,
and there's often an accident at the same time.
Well, you got big trucks on 22 who want to come to Salem, so odds are one of them will end up under the railroad trestle, and then everything will come to a standstill. So, I do think that we're going to be facing a very difficult, if not impossible, commute on Monday morning.
Well, the other thing is, too, is they're doing some road construction on River Road South.
That may not be done.
I mean, they're cutting it awful close. Because they haven't even started yet.
Yeah, Marion County just formally made that announcement yesterday, though there was some chatter a day or two before. Yeah, they're cutting it very close. And if it's not done in time and we don't have that option, that's a fairly large stretch, I think, from Vita Springs to Orville, if I remember correctly. Yeah, as you know, Orville Road can only handle so much traffic and people who know the road well. And if that's what we're relying on, it's a poor plan.
So when do you think we'll start to see some of these traffic issues? Will it start on, like, you know, middle of the week, or will it be Friday, Saturday, or?
I think we'll be feeling it on Wednesday and Thursday. I don't think it will be a critical mass, but I think folks who typically commute from Portland to Salem, for example, or Salem to Eugene, will feel the extra traffic on Wednesday, Thursday. Certainly Highway 20 going to Central Oregon and I-84 will feel it Wednesday, Thursday. I think at the local areas, we're really going to start to see it Saturday, Sunday on the side streets. I have a friend that's on the road construction crew on the highway from Philomath to Newport, and ODOT has halted their construction, has told them that they will temporarily stop, I believe, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, you know, they are taking measures to handle the volume as early as that on the highways.
Well, it sounds like if you haven't assembled your emergency kit for the earthquake, this is a good time to start. It's not quite an earthquake, but it could be a kind of a hard 3 or 4 days if you can't get out of your house to buy food or fill your car up with gas.
Absolutely.
Or get to work.
And think of those perishables, right? You know, you want to make sure you have those perishables in your fridge. Most of us have a pretty good supply of soup and boxed goods, but on a regular basis. But definitely think about your milk and those things you make quick trips to the store for. And pet supplies, too. Don't forget to have pet food on hand.
Don't forget the kitty cat. Well, again, my guest today is Kimber Townsend, and she's program coordinator for the Community Emergency Response Team in Polk County. Kimber, if you're interested in joining the CERT team in Polk County, how would you get involved? Is there a contact person, a website? How do you get started?
There's many ways. We do have a website. It's www.polkcountycert.org. And my contact information is on there. You can email me. It's ktownsend@polkcountycert.org. We're very active on Facebook and Twitter. We have a couple Facebook pages we manage, both a Polk County CERT Oregon page and a Teen CERT, Polk County, Oregon. Very active there. In fact, our next class is in October. It's the first three Saturdays in October. And that class information is on our Facebook page now as well for folks to take a look at.
Yeah, I didn't ask you directly, but I assume that you always need more volunteers.
Absolutely. We it ebbs and flows, right? We tend to stay between 80 and 110. Folks come and go, and, you know, we get them really energized about a potential disaster and the earthquake. And, you know, I find myself once in a while praying for just a little five or six, shake things up, knock stuff off shelves, get people incentivized again. Doesn't quite happen here. But over time, we do have some folks that become disinterested or drop off for other commitments.
Right.
And so we kind of stay in there. The sweet zone is about 80, 85. I manage the program entirely by my own, and it is a second part-time job they pitch to me. Once we start pushing above 100, I start to get a little, the span of control starts to hit, right? So we're kind of comfortable in that area. But I think the bigger question is not who you have on your team or how many, but how many we've trained. About 5 years ago, we decided to change our focus from team recruitment to community preparedness. And now we consider ourselves, for lack of a better term, a catch and release program. So we don't push hard to have to join the team to take our classes. It's not a requirement by any means. Our classes typically are about 25, 30 people, and maybe five or six will join the team, and that's okay. By our numbers, we've got over 700 people across the county who have taken and completed the class. And I know that in an emergent event, I guarantee they're going to do what they were trained to do, regardless of being on a team or not.
You mentioned there's a lot of teens that are involved with this. It's good training for young people. Do you have to be in good physical condition to be on this team?
You know, there are jobs for everyone. There's a lot of clerical work and taking inventory and things have been done with folks who may have some mobility or other ability issues. We have begun to reach out to other areas of our community, trying to take that holistic approach. So starting this fall, we will be delivering classes in Spanish and in ASL. We have an ASL instructor who is deaf from Western Oregon who is going back east this month, the end of this month, and completing his instructor certification there, and we'll be teaching the cert class in ASL so that our deaf community has full access as well. But there's something for everyone. There's room for everyone to do regardless of ability.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time this morning, Kimber.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.